For WILL, I'm Victoria Shepherd, and this is the Mid-American Gardener podcast, where we love to talk about anything connected to gardening in central Illinois. Today, I'm chatting with longtime former host of the Mid-American Gardener television show, who was also my very first guest on this podcast. Of course, I'm speaking of none other than award-winning, plant-loving Diane Noland. Welcome, Diane.
Wow, Victoria. I mean, that's really great. Thank you. Nice to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. It's a sunny day, and you look like a spring day right now.
Oh, it's really nice out. Do you know what it's nice to be doing and what I did this morning? I've been planting things.
You have been planting things, and funnily enough, I wanted to pick your brain about what we're going to talk about today. Did you know, I've learned quite a bit since I've been doing this, since the first episode. By no means am I an expert, like yourself.
You will be.
But
soon.
I'm having so much fun learning new tips and tricks that I've actually managed to share with friends and family. And it's nice to know that people in England are listening to this program.
Fabulous.
Yes. They download it and stream it. So, listen, I wanted to talk to you today about spring bulb planting, which that's what you were doing this morning, right?
What a coincidence. Yes, it
was. What a coincidence. Considering that Diane wasn't originally the guest that was going to be on today, she was going to be on in next week. This is perfect. So, tell me. Isn't it a bit early to be talking about spring?
It is not early to talk about spring hardy bulbs because you plant them in fall for spring flowering. It's just the non-hardy bulbs that you plant, usually after the threat of frost. But this is one of my favorite things. This is the category of plants that got me excited about horticulture. I'll tell my short story, but at the age of 5, we walked from my Sunday school class to our teacher's garden, and the first flower I saw was in April, and it was yellow, about a foot high, golden yellow, middle and center, and I can remember that, and it was a daffodil. That was at age 5, and then I ended up teaching it for 30 years at the University of Illinois, all of the spring bulbs. I plant them almost every year.
Now, is yellow your favorite color?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
No, but that daffodil, it's, you know, it's dreary. You're coming out of winter. It's so cheerful. It's fragrant. The sun was hitting it. It was just a ray of sunshine. I love it. So it's one of my favorite flowers, but it's hard to say one.
Okay. But as far as bulbs go, are there some basic bulbs or bulb basics that everyone should know about when they're getting ready for next spring?
Yes. Now, the basics are knowing, probably several, but knowing where to plant them. So I actually take notes in spring where I have gaps in my bulbs.
So last spring.
So spring of 18, I have my list here.
And you brought it with
you. I brought it, and I said, the heading is bulbs for fall planting. And so I wrote a note on the east side of the house. I want to plant winter aconite. I want more snow crocus. You know, I plant and where I wanted to put them because I remembered them in spring. So I think first is knowing where to plant them. Don't plant them on the edge because bulb foliage has to ripen or yellow.
When you say don't plant them on the edge, you mean the edge of the border.
The very front edge of the border. Don't plant them on the front edge of the border. Bring them back a foot if they're, you know, small crocus-like plants. Mm-hmm. If they're daffodils, bring them to the mid-border. If they're really tall tulips, put them in the background because there's nothing else in flower. And then your perennials and annuals can come up or be planted and cover the yellowing foliage because you must let the foliage ripen. Ripening means that the foliage photosynthesizes and puts more stored food in the bulb for next year.
So when I see those yellow leaves, I shouldn't pull them.
You can, at the yellow stage, you can. It's at the kind of sickly green yellow, floppy green yellow. But what I do is my tulips, I plant them in the middle of a border, and I don't see them. I have perennials that come up and cover them, anemones, you know, that cover them. Sedum does a great job. Put your, you know, daffodils or tulips behind sedum. It covers them.
Oh.
So you plant strategically, so your perennials come up. Shasta daisies are lovely to cover. Daylilies cover. You don't crowd them. You just put them behind. The bulbs go behind certain perennials that you have in your garden.
Okay. So plan ahead.
Plan ahead. Know where to position them. In fact, I planted crocus in and around my, it's Nepeta Fascinii. Catmint. I always remember the scientific name. I forgot the common name. I planted snow crocus in and around catmint because the foliage expands after the catmint, or the catmint foliage expands after the crocus flowers and covers it, but doesn't smother it.
Ah.
So you just do a little strategic planting to mask and cover up the yellowing foliage so you don't. And I don't even take it out most years. I just...
Well, then that's one of the questions I had for you, because I've noticed that our grape hyacinths have started coming up again.
Isn't that great?
So, well, it is, but should I have actually taken them up? It's okay that they're back up again?
Grape hyacinth and the little drumstick allium will force out foliage in the fall, so you have a marker to know not to plant anything else there in the fall. Then it overwinters, doesn't always look the best, but it overwinters, and then the flowers, boom, are ready to come up.
So that foliage that has just come up now, I should just leave that.
You should enjoy it, embrace it, celebrate it. Okay. But there's only two that come up like that. You know, that you don't do a thing. You've done nothing. You've not neglected anything, and you've done nothing wrong. It's just the way the plant works.
Now, with other bulbs then, is it okay to just leave them, or should you be picking up those each year and then replanting them the following year?
Most hardy bulbs, they will actually get better with age. Daffodils, crocus, I call them the little naturalizers, these little winter aconites and snowdrops. They get better with age. Tulips, I do have some 20-year-old tulips, but I started with 50 and now I've got 7. You know, tulips are not as perennial here, but I haven't replanted them. I just enjoy them and enhance by planting more when the tulips don't last forever. So you don't really ever have to bring them up, except one case I had, maybe a 25-year-old clump of daffodils, and they're kind of crowded, and I don't want to buy more bulbs of those kinds. So I lifted them at the end of the ripening. You can see where the foliage is.
Right.
So I lifted the bulb, and you can either store them in your garage or plant them back out immediately. And I think I've done some of each.
Okay.
But I only lifted those because I wanted to divide them and have free bulbs and not have to plant buy
free
anymore.
Is good.
Oh, but I do have a third tip for bulbs.
Okay.
And the third tip is how to plant them.
Aha. How far apart and how deep do you plant them?
Okay. There are two types of bulbs. The little snowdrop, we call them the little bulbs. The snowdrops are a little, actually a small bulb. The little yellow winter aconite, it looks like a clod of dirt. It's a corm. I have a funny story about that, but I'll get back to it. So the little bulbs are very small, and you plant them about 3 to 4 times the diameter. So little bulbs, you plant 3 inches deep by 3-inch spacing.
Okay.
So I call those the 3x3 bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
3x3. So 3 inches deep, 3 inches spacing. Not lined up, but, you know, a beautiful cluster.
Yeah. So don't be too regimental about putting them in.
Unless your house is all lined up and your sidewalks are all lined up, and then I wouldn't do it either. So kind of a natural look. I know some people actually throw the bulbs onto the site and just move them apart a little bit and make them look natural that way.
So scatter them.
Scatter. I think the English term is plant in drifts. I always thought that was pretty.
But plant in drifts.
Plant in drifts. And so that's the little bulbs, 3x3. And then the most famous bulbs are the hyacinths, tulips, and daffodils. And those are big bulbs, and they're more expensive, maybe up to $1 or more per bulb, some
really?
Of them. some of them are 50 cents if they're a more common type of tulip, for example. And they are big, so you plant those 6 inches deep, which is a very common trowel length.
That's a good
on purpose.
Rule of thumb. Yeah. Okay.
So 6 inches deep by 6 or so inch spacing. So I call those the 6x6. And that's how I taught it for years. The students could remember it.
That's simple?
3x3, 6x6. Now, if you have sandier soil or if you live in the Netherlands, you can plant them deeper. You know, but our soil, we're talking mid-American
right.
area. But if you live in a little different spot, you could go, I've seen 7 inches for some bulbs. So, but anyway, the small bulbs and the traditional 6x6 bulbs.
Now, talking of the big tulip bulbs, our tulips were completely trashed by the rabbits last year.
Yes.
Are there any spring bulbs that are critter resistant?
The bulbs that I have had no problem with are daffodils.
Uh-huh.
The hyacinths don't usually have anything. They have when you handle hyacinths, sometimes people will get a contact rash from there's something on the bulb that causes an irritation for some.
Oh.
Now, I plant them with gloves on, so I don't notice it.
Huge gloves.
Hyacinths and daffodils tend to not, they have chemicals in them that they're listed as deer resistant, and you'll find it on some of the packages. It'll actually say, oh, I've got a little snowflake. It's a 2.5 foot high bulb, and it says right on here, deer resistant. So it's a later bulb. It's a little beautiful hanging white bell with green flecks on the end called snowflake.
And it actually does say deer resistant on it.
And the other...
So do you think it's rabbit resistant as well then?
I think more so because...
There's something.
Of that. And I should know what's in it, but it's a chemical actually in the bulb that causes irritation.
Okay.
But tulips do not have that. And so now how people get around having critters dig up tulips is digging the site. You know, maybe you're going to plant 10 or 12 bulbs and you dig it up 6 inches deep and put chicken wire or hardware cloth down and make a little, almost a cave. You put it down, you put your bulbs in and soil.
Oh, and I see. You put the bulbs underneath. You plant them underneath, but then do they grow up through it?
Within the hardware cloth. You make it big enough that they'll grow up, but the critter can't get to it. So now what I do is I actually plant tulips in my fenced-in vegetable garden. And I plant them on the edge that I can see from my dining room window. So I have deer problems or deer opportunities. I have deer challenges.
Opportunists.
So I plant them in a fenced-in area. But if the rabbits want to get them, I mean, squirrels can dig them up.
Ugh.
But it's more tulips. I've seen a deer just eat an entire tulip. Might take 2 bites, but it's gone.
And then it doesn't look pretty.
Well, some critters will take off crocus and just snip. I mean, I think it's the squirrel. And they just leave them laying. I mean, they don't. So that's kind
we
of annoying.
Have what they're stealing our tomatoes and they put them on top of the fence. Like they were on top of a fence post, a tomato that they'd stolen.
And this is what kind of critter do you think?
That's a squirrel. Oh.
Yeah.
They are
now,
destroying.
They don't eat them?
They take a mouthful or two, but then they just strew them more.
That's the definition of annoying. That's really annoying.
Yeah, I have some choice words that I use for those little things.
But deer resistant is the most that it's labeled for. But
okay.
I think some of these that are a little harder to eat, I think, might also be rabbit resistant.
Now, you mentioned you had a funny story. I want to go back to
okay.
that funny story.
So that little winter aconite, it's a real small bulb, and it looks like a dirt clod. So I was teaching it one day, and a student who worked for our student garden, the Hartley Garden, it's not the student garden, it's the U of I garden, selections, trial garden, and he was working for him, and he said, well, that explains a lot, because I had talked about the plant, and even with winter aconite, sometimes you soak, it looks like a dirt clod, you soak it overnight and it seems to swell the corm up.
Before you plant
it. Yeah, and it's really the only one you have to do. I think might be a tuber. Crocus is a corm and winter aconite's a tuber. He said, that explains it. He said, I couldn't find any bulbs in the packet. He had gone through and thought they were dirt clods and had thrown out over 50% of the winter aconite because he thought they were dirt clods. And he said, oh my. I said, now we have learned something here, haven't we, class? Or something very, I didn't want to laugh at him or anything, but I thought it was gracious of him to share. Very nice of the student to admit that, because then everyone remembered.
Soak it. Look for it. It's not dirt.
It plant it if it looks. But everything else has a little bit of a pointed end on
a
bulb.
Does it matter which way you put it in?
You really do. You can see the root crown. Mm-hmm. It's rounded at the bottom. You really do want to put that down. And it will reorient, but it's better just to put the flat root side down and the little point up, which sometimes gets shifted when you put it down in a deeper hole. But they are phototropic and geotropic. They'll go down with the roots and up with
they'll figure it out.
They will, but you don't want to obviously plant them.
Give them a little helping hand.
Yes, plant them as nicely as you can.
Now, once you've put them in the ground for the new bulbs, do you need to fertilize or feed them?
You can, and they say it's more for root production, so it's bone meal and things that are better, you know, not nitrogen.
Okay.
So it could be, but bone meal is used a lot. We have good soils in this part of the country, so a lot of times people don't even fertilize them to start, but you can use root producing, you know, more of the phosphorus and potassium, but not nitrogen. So bone meal, you'll see it right there when you buy bulbs. You'll see bone meal, and it's a little white powder. So I cover it up. You can have the bone meal side dressed.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I actually watered in the bulbs, which is not super necessary, but it had been dry, and then I mulched over them.
Now, I know you've explained it to me before, but can we go over again? When you say side-dressed, how far away from the actual plants are you doing that little strip sort of thing?
And it's just a couple inch. And with a bulb being circular, I just kind of do a circle around it.
Ah.
And because the bulb is planted deeper, it's not as critical. The side-dressing when a plant has a crown and leaves, you just don't touch it. But it's a couple inches around it, and it will soak in with the rain. So you just don't put it right on the plant. You put it to the side.
Okay.
And that'll work out. Can I tell you about one bulb I haven't planted yet?
What is this?
I have another story about the bulbs I just had come in, but I buy bulbs locally, and I did get one shipment in. But this bulb is called Camassia. It's Camassia, and this is the bulb that Lewis and Clark
It looks a little bit like an asparagus tip.
It's light bluish. Some look kind of light lavender. But Camassia is the bulb that helped Lewis and Clark make it through their first winter. This is a native plant, and they learned how to dig Camassia or Camass by the Mandan Indians. And so this is a native bulb.
And you can eat that then?
If you don't want the beautiful, lovely flowers that come up.
I just wanted to make sure that's how they
save them. This is the bulb
that
you can eat. And its planting depth is a little bit deeper, so you had to work. It might be 7 or 8 inches deep. But it's such a beautiful plant. I just think it's so sad to have to dig it up. And it's a couple, you know, couple feet tall, 24 to 28 inches.
And it's got a little picture of a deer with a cross through it. So
yes.
Presumably it's deer resistant.
Deer resistant. But Camassia is one of my favorite. I bought it and then a tree overlapped the area I had it, so it was too shady. So now I'm starting in again. And these are big bulbs, so that's more the traditional 6x6, or in this case, it looks like 7. But it's a beautiful plant, really lovely
and
leaves.
And what is the flowering time for that, for
It's in the spring, in April. It doesn't really say on this, but it's usually more April, May. Because I remember it was in full flower when I had my class come out at the last day of classes, probably the first week of May, end of April through mid-May.
And how long do they flower for?
Oh, if we would not get 90 degrees in May, if we could have an...
Good luck with that. I love a spring.
I love a spring that's 50s and 60s, maybe almost a 70. But if we were to get a spring, it would be in flower 3 to 4 weeks. 90-degree weather is really detrimental to the life. So we want misty rain, overcast days.
Or move
to England or the Pacific Northwest. They have it lovely.
And where else do you get your bulbs from?
Well, coincidentally, earlier this week...
Funnily enough.
Funny that you should ask, but I received a packet or a box in the mail, and it was from the order that I made from the WILL trip to the Netherlands and Belgium that we went on from this station in April.
And that was organized by the station.
It was organized by the station. We went to Kuchenhof, which is the lovely 70-acre flowering garden. Beautiful. And so we spent 5 glorious hours there, and I bought a selection. It was Prince Albert's collection, and it was lots of purples.
Ooh, how many did you buy?
There were 3 different types of tulips in purples, whites, and purple and white, and then 3 types of daffodil, narcissus, a purple hyacinth, and a white grape hyacinth. And they sent the white grape hyacinth called Siberian Tiger. So I'm all excited. So I'm trying to figure out where to plant all those.
So how many bulbs? Admittedly, you have a very large garden. But in general, per square foot, how many flowers would you put in?
Let's see. So 6 inches apart, you may end up with, you could put 3 across on a 12. So you could maybe put 9.
Okay. And how many do you plant every year, Diane?
Do you
ever count them?
This is a bigger year for me, just because I went to the Netherlands with our lovely group from WILL. But then I got antsy and I bought things locally because I knew I wasn't getting these. So it's not a lot. But one year, I think I got 200 bulbs in, combination. But I think this one, most of them come in 12s. Now, I never buy less than a dozen of any one thing. So this Camas comes with 4, but I bought several.
Oh, I was going to say.
I bought several. And
But they're bigger, though, so...
But they still look good in clusters.
Do any of these have a scent?
The daffodils have a scent. I believe this little guy, the snowflake, is nicely scented. Some of the tulips have a bit of a scent.
Mm-hmm.
And this little winter aconite is fragrant. The thing is, you almost have to fall down and smell these little 3-inch high ones. You almost have to trip and fall.
Your neighbors are walking past. They might think you're a little strange.
But daffodils and some of the tulips, but daffodils have the best scent. It's really nice.
Now, with planting them now, do you need to protect them, cover them in any way from frost or snow?
You don't. You plant them the prescribed depth. They need to be planted in October, November, early November, because they need to set down roots. And the cold weather that they go through in the winter initiates the flower buds. So you need the cold weather to have the flowers. So it's difficult for people in the South to grow. They have to get them pre-chilled, pre-cooled. So anyway, you need the warmer weather for the roots. You need the cooler weather to initiate flower buds. And you don't do anything. Even if we get a warm spell and daffodils push up.
Don't panic.
Just the leaves, don't panic. They are hardy spring bulbs. They might get a little browning at the tip, but it usually does not hurt the flowers. I had an early little, it was called, it was a little daffodil. It was called Peeping Tom. It had a really long trumpet on it, Peeping Tom, and it was about 8 inches high. He didn't peep into the windows because he was only 8 inches high. He got totally encased in ice with an ice storm, just stayed there kind of encased for a few days. It warmed up slightly, but not big jump, thawed out, and he flowered for another 3 weeks, the cluster.
Wow, so it just kind of preserved him.
and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really sharp. The sharp drops in temperatures might be worse than ice encasing it, and then it
gradually.
Thawed out gradually. That's correct.
Hmm.
So you just plant and then enjoy.
Now, do some bulbs do better in full sun or sunny areas and some better in shade? What are some options?
That's an excellent question.
Oh, thank you very much.
Most bulbs like sun and to a partial shade, but the early bulbs that flower, the winter aconite and snowdrops flower in February, March, they can be planted anywhere because how many leaves are on the trees in February, March? So if you plant them under deciduous trees, meaning trees that lose their leaves, you can plant the little bulbs anywhere. Evergreens, no, never plant under evergreens directly under.
Okay.
But that gives you such variety of planting location because you can plant these little ones I planted today. I planted under, I have a paper bark maple and I planted snow crocus under it, not right by the roots, but you know.
Because you've got to be careful of the tree roots, right?
Yeah, you don't want to plant right at the tree roots. So I planted it. I did a drift. I had some, you know, coming from behind it to a little bit in front of it.
So my mom, when she visited last year, and she said that she does this, and I don't know if this is a common thing that people do in America, she gets a big pot, a flower pot, and she called it a lasagna. And she sort of plants them at different depths. Is that,
that
something?
That is a lovely thing to do. And it's really good for people who have a way to keep it at the right temperature. You do have to get enough chilling. That's called, you know, it's called forcing them. You know, you're actually forcing flowers. Does she bring it in?
No.
She leaves it outside. So it's a big pot.
You know what? I have to chat with her. She was just coming up with suggestions for me last year. And she said, oh, you could always get some pots and make a lasagna. And
if it doesn't freeze, you know, here, now there's a little more maritime climate in England. But, you know, I've seen people put them around a bale of straw, you know, or near a foundation for a while and then bring it out. But it's beautiful because the tulips are 6 inches deep. And it's lovely with some of the single early red tulips. You've got the red tulips 6 inches deep. Then you plant the little, there's little anemones. Grecian windflowers or Grecian anemones. They're 3 inches deep. And you can have white anemones with red tulips coming up through. It's gorgeous what your mom was talking to you about.
Yeah.
It's really gorgeous. We just have to be careful that we don't freeze our bulbs in the soil in too small of a pot.
So it needs to be a big pot or you bring them in.
Or you put them near the foundation and have maybe a cold frame that's not getting sun, but more just protection of the pot. But yes, you can do that.
Okay.
Then the other thing I was talking about is if you have a way to chill your bulbs for a certain amount of time, then you can bring them in early and have some hyacinths in the house.
Oh, in the house.
And that's called forcing them.
Okay.
But you can also buy them and support your local industries by seeing them and purchase them and bring them from a store or a garden center.
Oh, well, after they force them.
After they force them. And my hint for that is to purchase them right when you can see the color. Don't wait for all of the flower to be open. Right when you see the tulip, right when you see the daffodil color, right when you see the hyacinth, and you get more days at home because they will continue to open. That's the other thing I teach in my floral design classes, too.
And you are still teaching, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I teach. I have 100 and not quite 120. I think I have 100, more like 110 students this semester learning floral design. But I taught bulbs and perennials for 30 years, and I loved that, too. So now I'm planting, and not teaching it, but I'm planting it, except today.
And I am very honored to have you here. We are very honored to
have
you here.
Loved this topic. Thank you so much.
But listen, before we go, one more question for you. If you were a bulb, what would you be and why?
I would be a narcissus. I would be a daffodil. And I'll tell you why. Daffodils don't come with just a single bulb, but they have like two and three bulbs if you get the multiple bulb head. I don't get eaten by deer. Daffodils are one of the longest flowering ones. One of my students lived next to a daffodil cut flower farm, and they were still flowering after 100 years. Daffodils are the best buy for your dollar. They last forever. I would be a daffodil.
Well,
that's
thank
the easiest
goodness,
question.
We will never get rid of Diane. She is going to stick around.
A daffodil.
Well, thank you, Diane.
Thank you, Victoria.
We have wished you that. It was delightful, as always. Many thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us for another episode of the Mid-American Gardener podcast. Mid-American Gardener is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Victoria Shepherd. Executive producer was Lisa Brolz. Find us on the web at midamericangardener.org, where you can stream us as many times as you like. And as a reminder, this and past episodes are also available through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and the NPR One app. And if you have any gardening questions for future inclusion on either the TV show or podcast, email us at yourgarden@gmail.com. Message us via Facebook or call and leave us a voicemail at 217-300-8224. Thanks again to Diane Noland, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another gardening whiz. Until then, go get your spring bulbs and put on your gardening gloves. The clock's a-ticking, folks.